Coverage of Where 2.0 is brought to you by MSN Search, the new, more precise search engine at search.msn.com. That's search.msn.com.
So there's a new buzzword on the planet. You know, we've talked about tagging for a while, and people are just now starting to get a hold of it. And even days after GnomeDex having launched, is still one of the top 10 tags at technorati.com. I'm very happy to see that. And one of the people responsible for a lot of things that happen at Technorati and beyond is Kevin Marks. And I've known Kevin for a few years now. Met him for the first time at the Blogger launch party when we were drinking the Purple Cow.
Raging Cow.
Raging Cow, that was it. What is the Purple Cow? Purple Cow is Seth Godin.
Yes.
I wasn't drinking that. No, we were drinking the Dr. Pepper Mountain Dew.
It was some strange thing. They had a fake blog.
Yeah, it was one of the first flogs, I think,
right,
that anybody knew about.
That was what actually inspired me to invent VoteLinks in the first place.
VoteLinks?
VoteLinks was one of the original microformats. Basically a way of expressing on your link that you disagree with what you're linking to.
Okay. So this is a precursor then to this new buzzword being microformats. Okay. So we've got a link, a regular link. We link off to, say, technorati.com. What is microformats? How does it play into regular linking conventions?
Microformats, the idea there is to use the smallest possible way of expressing an idea so that you're not trying to build that's where the micro comes from. So you're trying to build a single expression in the simplest way in HTML, but still be able to let it have meaning for both people and for computers that want to parse it. So the tag microformat is an example of that. The way that works is you link to a URL that ends in a word, so technorati.com/tag/gnomedex, for example, and then you add a rel to that. You say rel equals quote tag close quote inside the ahref, which says the relationship between the page you're on and that page is that it is a tag for it.
Okay, so the rel attribute for the a tag or the anchor tag is there to define the relationship of the link to the meaning of placing that link?
It defines the relationship between the page or piece of page containing that link and the page linked to.
Okay. So you've made it so super simple. There's nothing to learn here, no learning curve at all. It sounds to me that it's so simple that people aren't going to catch on for another 3 years.
Well, that was the interesting thing, because we built this thing in late January, early February.
And we being you, Tantec.
Me, Tantec, Derek, and Dave Sifri at Technorati.
Okay.
We were the band. Everyone else at Technorati helped out too, but we sort
certainly
of, we put this together initially, and then we did the original work as the first thing we did was we put a page up for New Year's resolutions, and we said if you link to this page, we'll put your New Year's resolutions on the page. This was sort of an experiment. We were saying, okay, the idea being that because we track links, if you link to our page, we can put you on the page you're linking to, which is sort of strangely reflexive, but it works.
Is that like a trackback kind of mechanism?
Not sort of.
A manual trackback mechanism?
Because we're indexing things anyway, we know what links you make. So we know if you're linking to a certain page.
So you're like the Santa Claus of the blogging world here then?
Yep.
You know when we're sleeping, you know when we're awake.
I can read your thoughts.
Good to know. What am I thinking now, Kevin?
We have to blog them first.
Oh, yes.
We tried that, and what we found was that people were linking to it two ways. They were linking to it saying, here are my New Year's resolutions, and we're putting those up. And then they were linking, there's this great page at Technorati full of people's New Year's resolutions. And so we got this page that have like one or two resolutions and three people saying, this is a great page. Because the intent of the link wasn't being expressed. So what we said was, we need to distinguish those two cases, which is where we came up with rel equals tag. Now, that means you can link to the GnomeDex tag Technorati without saying your post is about GnomeDex.
Okay, so why would I do that though? Why would I, as someone who creates links, care?
You care because if you link to that page and say it's a tag, then we'll put you on that page.
And I say create the experience for me. Create an example.
So the example would be I'm watching the stuff about GnomeDex, and I disagree with something someone says there. So I write my own post about that, and then I put rel equals link to GnomeDex, rel equals tag on that, so that it's clear that that's about GnomeDex. What that means is that when people go and look up GnomeDex on Technorati, they'll see that up at the top, there'll be a tag that says, there's a recent post that's about GnomeDex. So I'm communicating to people reading it that that's what I think this post is about. So rather than just having the word in the post, is explicitly saying this post is about Nemdex.
Okay. So are there a set of definitions then, that words that we can use? So for instance, if I use the align attribute, I can say align right, align left, align center, absolute middle, absolute bottom, absolutely, the whole runs the gamut. Are there certain, I guess, words that are just the base set of words that we're working with here?
So, well, for tags, no. The point about tags is that you pick your own words.
And so the rel equals whatever the tag
is. So the rel equals tag is so
the tag not the, being the word, tag being italicized, meaning that it's a replacement for something else, a wild card.
Right, no. So there's two pieces here.
Okay. I'm trying to understand this, and I know it's
I know.
Difficult to translate into audio.
It works better if I can point at things. The place you link to defines the tag. So you're saying the last piece of the URL is the word or words that is the tag, and you can make those up as you will. You can put your own meaning there. The value tag in the relationship in the rel attribute says that this is a tag. Now you can put other things in the rel attribute. The HTML spec defines a bunch of these. It has like next page, previous page, index, stuff like that for document navigation. But it's extensible, so you can add new values to that. So tag was one we added to that and encouraged people to adopt. But you can add other ones. There's another example of this, which is the XHTML Friends Network, which adds relationships to the tags to define friendship relationships. So you can say rel equals met friend Chris Perillo, where I link to your blog or whatever,
so
whatever your page is
so
a proxy for you.
The rel equals...
is saying that the relationship between my page, my blog, which is a proxy for me, and your blog, which is a proxy for you, is this. So it's like doing Friendster in your blog role.
Okay. So it's a way to further define or clarify someone
right.
who I know and
or,
have
or,
met.
Or have you met, or a colleague,
yeah.
or you know,
I've even
have
taken
a crush
that.
On, that kind of thing.
Certainly. I've taken that route, at least with the only social network I seem to be using on a regular basis, Flickr. And I only add people who I have met in person or actually do know. If I don't know this person, if they're not a known quantity, I don't even add them because
right.
otherwise it gets cluttered.
Exactly. It's communicating information.
Machine-readable communication?
Machine-readable communication.
Okay, so the user's not going to see. It's just going to look like a link in a web browser.
Yes, except that because there's machine-readable information there, you could style it. So you could add a CSS rule that would change, that would put a little heart next to all the ones that were marked friend, for example. If you look at the way people use blog rolling, you find they do things like this. They put little exclamation marks and stars, and they have their own private code for what this stuff means. So you could do this in a machine-readable way. You're expressing it in a consistent way, and you could apply the visual side with CSS.
Rel equals friend. Rel equals however you define.
So you would. Well, I'm going to try and say CSS verbally, but you can say if the rel... attribute contains friend then before put
right
before
put, X,
put a
y,
heart
Z,
or whatever
right. Yeah, certainly that's CSS code.
Yeah, so the CSS can do that.
But then is it going to be relevant to something like Technorati that kind of takes the web, the conversational web, and parses it and then places it on a page? So I've been sending people lately to technorati.com/search/Nomdex because it seems to have the most relevant up-to-date information about what had recently transpired at the conference. But if someone puts a different relationship equals blank, blank being a wild card, how is Technorati then going to interpret those various ways that someone has defined that relationship
well, that's,
as being?
That's the point of defining a microformat.
Who defines the microformat, though? That's
the person who sees a problem that needs to be solved. Okay, so we've defined a few because we saw some problems.
Okay, so it's kind of
like... go to microformats.org... we're collecting standards there. We're trying to get people to think about this, put standards together there.
Okay.
And
so you don't have a whole bunch of, pardon the expression, wild cards running loose. You're trying to...
We're trying to converge.
Put it out. Right, right.
The point of microformats is trying... There are a lot of problems that people are trying to express. Tagging was one of them. That was a nice, simple one. Another example would be a calendar event. People always want to say, I'm doing this on such and such day. I'm attending Wear 2.0 today or whatever. There's a party down the road or whatever. So we said, okay, it would be really nice to have a nice, simple way of doing that in HTML so people can use the same thing. So rather than start from a blank slate and try and invent this, we went and looked what existed. And what exists is a spec called iCalendar, which is used by all the major calendaring programs. It's like the interchange format. So we looked at that spec. They seem to have done a really pretty good job of defining what an event is and what kind of attributes can have start and stop and location and URL and time zone and stuff. So we map those values directly into HTML. Basically, do a one-for-one mapping. If it's called this field, then we place an element there that has that same label.
I think that's the sample that you've used, too.
Right.
The Gnomedex calendar.
The Gnomedex calendar is something that I took the Gnomedex calendar page and I added this markup to that. Now, what that means is it's still readable by humans just as it was before.
Yeah, because it's a web page. I mean,
it's
you can't tell the difference. It's all what's happening underneath.
Right. But what's underneath is there's some extra markup that's telling the computer, this is actually an event, this is the start time, this is the stop time. So you can feed that to a program that will look for that data.
Okay,
and
wait,
construct.
Wait. Now you're kind of losing me here. Okay. And it's just in need of clarification. You
sure.
can send that to a program. Is this something that is already installed on a user system, a server level? Is it a script?
It's a web service.
Okay,
the one that I used was a web service. You could be either. The point is, there is now data there that a computer can parse and make sense of without having to do like natural language date parsing.
Would that make sense in a plugin type of architecture? So
potentially,
if you had like a WordPress installation or a movable type installation, Ecto, the list goes on and on, for it to play as the interpreter for those.
Well, in that case, they would play as a generator. That would be useful. So you could add the.
So wait, okay. It acts as the.
Let me get back to the. Go to the parse a bit first.
Certainly.
So there's a web service written by this chap Brian Suda in England. So you go to his website and you put in a URL of your web page, and he gives you back an ICS file, which is the iCalendar format, which can then be opened by iCal, Outlook, whatever.
So someone has a web service or a website that would then host the script.
But the nice thing is that most of these calendar programs already have the ability to subscribe to a remote ICS file. So you can put the URL in, and every time that page changes, they'll detect it and update your calendar. Well, by doing that through this gateway, you can add events to your blog and have them show up in other people's calendars directly.
Come again?
Basically...
Maybe that was so...
We're using stuff that's already there.
Okay.
Because this format exists, this ICS format exists for calendars, and because the calendaring programs have got the idea of a calendar at a remote URL that will update in your program, we just make sure we can generate one of those from your blog. So that means when you add an event to your blog, the remote script will parse that and add it on.
You can basically put your calendar online, kind of like what iCal does with sharing, or to a certain degree Outlook.
Yes.
Only smarter, better.
Only doing it, you can do it in your blog and not in some other strange thing that you've got to maintain yourself.
Yeah, it's just done automatically.
Right.
Is that through a separate entry that you may make?
You can do it either way. I mean,
That's where I'm thinking it may be either a plug-in for, say, any type of CMS, or almost, are we talking about a next generation of application that runs side-by-side with as an interpreter or a generator?
So the thing is, I mean, all those things are now possible. Once we can get a sort of standard converging around this, then people can build those tools.
Okay.
So Ryan King built an example generator program in JavaScript that you put the event in, it'll create the correct markup for you. And
that's great. Yeah, we
and then
that.
Already people... I've forgotten his name. Les Orchard took that script and then put that into a GreaseMonkey script so that every time you have a text field, there'll be a little button above it that would trigger that script and drop it into the text field.
Interesting.
So you could... Suddenly it was integrated, as long as using Firefox, into all the blogging tools.
Well, there is, I think, there's a GreaseMonkey for Internet Explorer as well, though I don't think it's taken off half as much.
So there's, you know... And there are these plug-in mechanisms. But the point is, the microformat thing is defining a data format, a simple data format that's easy to generate and easy to parse that we can use for interchange.
That's using HTML.
That's using HTML.
Requiring no further knowledge of a new spec, a new markup language. It's just defining new tags.
And that acts as a useful constraint. It stops you getting too carried away.
Yeah.
It's very easy when you're an engineer to try and solve the sort of... The two more levels of abstraction than you need.
Okay, let's bring it to relevance for this particular conference, where 2.0 has geo-tagging become a part of the microformat spec. So if I were to say rel equals geo and then give a longitude-latitude, would it then be pinpointed, the link that I'm pinpointing or image that I'm linking to, would it have a geo-relevance?
So that's something we're having a birds-of-the-feather discussion about tonight, to try and come up with what is the minimal... set of data you need to define geography usefully.
Minimal is like longitude, latitude. That's, it doesn't get any more minimal than that.
That's maybe too minimal. Longitude and latitude isn't quite enough for you to present a map, because you don't know what scale to show it at. If I give you a longitude and latitude of where I'm standing now, you don't know whether to show a map of this floor of the hotel, the whole hotel, San Francisco, or the north, you know, North California.
Yeah, that's kind of unwieldy, though. I mean, you could.
So
that's
no,
like
it's just a natural human thing.
Sunday.
If you look at, you don't need to do 6 degrees of freedom, which way you're pointing, all that stuff. Right. What you do need to say is roughly it's latitude and longitude, and the area of interest is around this much. And if you look at any of the mapping services, you always have that. You can pan it and you can zoom it.
So is that, would that be up to the person who's actually creating that relevance, or would it be up to the interpreter of that?
It'll be up to the person creating it.
Okay, and why is that?
Because what you're referring to, you know, when I'm referring to my house, am I referring to, you know, this is my house, the part is in my back garden,
you know,
or am I referring to it in the context of San Jose?
I'm just thinking this is like going to do so much for our cognitive skills, because we're going to actually have to think about what we're writing about and the relevance of writing it. And do you think, quite honestly, with as many bloggers who are out there today who can barely spell the word go, are they going to latch onto this idea and make it so that it's actually useful instead of something that's...
Well, this is the other thing. I mean, this is the other argument. The other argument for geography is that latitude, longitude... isn't very helpful. What's helpful are human-level reference points. Mm-hmm. So if I say the St. Francis Hotel, that defines a space more clearly. If I say the mezzanine floor of the St. Francis Hotel by the O'Reilly sign, that defines it much more locally. If I say San Francisco, that defines it less locally.
Wouldn't it be, I guess you could
Union
have it...
Union Square. There's a graduation of where these things are that are in human terms.
But it would be a lot more, I mean, to me, I think, interesting to... You know, put the longitude latitude in there for a link relevance, and then an interpreter for that link. So let's say a scraper, if you will, a script that's reading the links that I have on the page and the geotags that I have on that page, and then letting that interpreter say, look at this particular map, you know, overview, overlay, you know, in a vector based,
right.
Micro level.
Sure, but the question is, you know. What's the useful reference for a person? If you're thinking about a person blogging, they're going to say, I'm at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco.
Certainly.
They're not going to say, 37 degrees north minus 130
No one
degrees
would, east. Yeah, no one would know the coordinates. Yeah. But
so the point is, if they have to enter something like that, then they'll get it wrong. If you look at, there was this idea, GeoURL, where people put their coordinates in the top of their blogs.
Yeah.
If you actually look at the data they've got, it's all over the place. People get the sign of them wrong. They get the latitude and longitude swapped. If you look at the map, there's like the outline of the west coast of the United States, and there's like this mirror version over in Russia because they got the sign of it wrong. There's a rotated version just over in Africa because they got the latitude and longitude wrong. Because you know, you're typing numbers into a text thing in your HTML, and there's no good feedback loop. Now, the natural feedback loop is something like Google Maps or
something visual,
MapQuest, visual where you say, okay,
pointing it like an Ajax script.
Stick a pin in here and zoom in as close as is interesting.
Yeah.
And if you can do that manually, then you can say, okay, link to this place.
And then it would be neat to be able to use the Google Map API and actually create a page or a site that allows you to zoom in on a particular location, give you the actual tag built, the geotag to build by zooming in. And you could do that. I mean,
That's something that
a developer could do that.
Absolutely. I'm sure someone can and will do that.
But
the point is to come up with a way of expressing this simply and clearly so people can add this
that's
converging on that.
Right, and I understand, and I think it's a fantastic idea. My only question is, you know, the amount of people who are out there who don't think about the things that they write about or necessarily the relevance of the things they're writing about. So,
well, it's the same with tagging. I mean,
certainly. I mean,
you know, we said, okay, tag your post.
and then it was just kind of like free-for-all.
And then, but we actually fed back the post that people had tagged to them, and they saw there was a value to it. So if you start, you know, it's not quite build it and they will come, but if you say, okay, if you do this, then you'll get this benefit and it's clearly visible, then people will do it. It's like tagging on Flickr. You put your pictures on Flickr and you say, okay, if I tag it with this, people will be able to find it and they'll see it belongs to that group. And there's a nice feedback loop for people. So it's a combination of making it simple enough that it's not too much work to do. As you say, you don't have to think too hard about, you know, am I in San Francisco or am I in the hotel?
Boy, you know, that would be interesting for Flickr to actually involve Yahoo Maps on that level, just to make geotagging easier, to say where I took this picture to pinpoint.
Now you're thinking,
I wonder if Katarina and Stuart have thought that direction. I haven't met them yet in person, so.
I've talked to Stuart. So I'll...
that would be quite an interesting crossover. So that's
another point of the microformats idea is, if you take a simple way of expressing something like this, you can combine them together. So you could combine a tag with a location to say, I have tagged this location, you know.
But it just seems to me so simple, I mean, which is great. I mean, you need that for adoption. I mean, much like really simple syndication. I mean, it was so simple that it took people forever to really understand what you could do with it, and we're still exploring what's happening. But in that simplicity, there's also a lot of complexity in thinking about how to... Like I said, it's
subtlety,
a cognitive process. It's a new process that most people are just used to. A, href, you know, maybe they'll throw a target in there every once in a while, like parent, top, you know, blank.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a new way of thinking
linking. And there has to be a benefit to doing it, or people won't do it. Now, this is, I mean...
And so it's a CMS's responsibility to...
Well, it's also, it's about cognitive load.
Yeah.
The example for tagging is, if you look at iPhoto. Now, iPhoto version 1 had tagging in. You wouldn't know it, but it has it. If you go and look, there's a little menu called keywords, and it brings up this panel.
Picasa has that too.
Yeah. And it brings this little panel of list of keywords, and you look at that, okay. And how you use it is, first you go and define a keyword, and then you go and select all the photos you want to have that keyword, and you click apply. Nobody uses it. Nobody uses it because... the cognitive load is too high. First of all, you've got to decide, what are my categories in the abstract? Which means you've got to think about everything you might have taken a photograph of and pick out what the category is.
Boy.
Then you've got to put that in. Then you've got to go and find all the things that live in that category and click and label them and say, these are in that category. So it's basically like, it's like tidying your room. You know, it's like clearing out your bookcase or something. And so the cognitive load of that is so high that nobody does it. Flickr inverted that. Flickr said, okay, you've just uploaded this picture. Give me some words that belong with it.
Yeah.
And you type in 5 words, and you go on to the next one. Or you type in 5 words that belong to the whole film strip or whatever. You took them all on the beach or something.
Yeah.
They did it that way around. They didn't say, you know, first think of how you're classifying everything, and then classify things. You're just saying, here's an example, one up. And then they derived it back from that. So the cognitive load for that is far lower. You're looking at one thing, you're saying what it's about, and you can do that very simply. You're not having to build 2 layers of abstraction first. And that's the difference between, you know, why got used and well it didn't, as well as the, you know, sharing with other people thing.
But so did this all start with the nofollow?
No, nofollow was sort of late to the
nofollow kind of came about just recently, and then microformats just kind of sprang up almost immediately.
Well, no, we've been working on the microformat stuff before that.
Oh, certainly, I'd imagine. Was that a different faction? Do we have to take the nofollow
people
down?
No.
Is there an argument we can start here? Is this a whole new RSS versus RDF versus
there was,
Adam
there was
thing?
Not really, no.
Ah, dang it.
Nofollow is a microformat in our terms,
yes,
because it's giving it, solving an explicit problem. I mean, it's a problem that I think I already solved with vote links, but, you know, that's an argument there.
Can you do then?
But what they did was they took, and again, they did the right thing. They said, there's an existing standard for nofollow which says don't follow the links if you're a search engine. We'll give it a way to apply that to individual links. So they followed microformats principles, whether, you know, we told them about them in advance or not. That's fine. And it does work.
So is spam then playing a part of any of this? Or would we continue to use a nofollow tag if we wanted to link to something and not give it any more power than, say...
Yeah, well, the nice thing about the...
Boy, you want to talk about a next-generation search engine.
Their composition. They're composable. One of the nice things about doing stuff in HTML is that you can apply multiple classes, multiple relationships to an individual item.
Would you separate them by commas, semicolon?
Spaces.
Okay, but what if it... So then each one has to have... Just be a single letter.
Yes, a single word.
So what if it is... It's never going to be 2 words.
Well,
or
this is the relationship
relationship
or the
yes.
class values.
The values, yes.
So it's just, you know, that's the convention.
So you would use a dash.
So you can label, you know, you can say, I'm tagging this, but I don't want you to actually give that any Google weight. So you can say, rel equals tag no follow if you want.
Yeah.
You know, that's perfectly legitimate. Or you can say, I'm linking to this guy I met, but I don't want you to give him any weight. So, you know, I met so and so, no follow him. You know, they're composable.
Or you met, you're not friends. You seriously?
There isn't any tag.
Just think now, Kevin. Obviously, I'm blue skying here. That's what I do. I'm the idea guy. So imagine the next generation of search engines being able to, you know, just search through all the geo URL, the geo tagged relationships, or the friend tagged, or these types of tags. I mean, that list can get unwieldy.
Well, that's, you know, I write a search engine, so yes. I mean,
which one?
Take a
right. Okay, yes, I was just trying to get the
get the plugin.
Just in case someone just, you know, fast forwarded to this point, you know,
skipped in. The that's obviously one of the reasons we're doing it. If we can get people to put more useful data out there, it makes the indexing better and easier. It only works if we can, you know, if we're finding data that people want us to find, and we can help them with that. So this is, you know, tagging is the prime example of that.
So you're not
once we actually fed back people's tags to them and said this is what these things are about, they started using them, and we got huge numbers of tags generated in a very short time.
You're not a consortium; you are just a group of people who are trying to make the web better.
Yeah.
So do you do regular kumbaya meetings? You know, just kind of buy the world a Coke. Like teach the world to sing.
We have get-togethers now and then. We talk, whatever. There's a website, microformats.org.
Yeah.
It has a wiki on it. There's a blog, a mailing list,
certainly
a technorati tag,
RSC
channel.
No, the fact that you're taking it beyond, you know, what a normal search engine or a company would do seems to be very transparent, very community-oriented. It's very refreshing to see.
Well, there's two ways of doing stuff. You can either say, okay, in order to do this, I'll build a website to do this. You have to come to my site to do all the work. It's in my database.
I
own it.
Yeah.
But and that has some advantages. It has the advantage in that it's in one place. You can control the UI. You can make it fairly straightforward for people to use it. But it's not really you don't own your own data that way. And we're much more interested in people owning their own data, putting their stuff on their own blogs, and we can go out and index them.
Because they're
taking the information. And this stuff has applications beyond blogs as well. You know, I was able to do it to the Gnomedex calendar page,
certainly.
And that worked fine. So the point is, it's making the web richer by adding more data.
All right, well, Kevin, I think we've taken enough of your time, and hopefully your voice won't die before the end of the day or week.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Coverage of WHERE 2.0 is brought to you by MSN Search, the new, more precise search engine at search.msn.com. That's search.msn.com.